It's obviously a career day for Ronald Jones. Can you just put in perspective what that 98 yard?
No doubt. You know, up in New York, he had a rough fumble on a ball that was on the ground. And, you know, this one, he was trying to get a little extra. And he went to tank in New York. It really bothered him. They thought he really hurt the team. And we told him, hey, dude, you're our guy. And I knew he was going to break one sooner or later. And Blaine and I looked at each other. And said, Blaine said, he's going to take it to the house. I said, good chance on this play. And he did.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, and welcome back to the Locked On Bucs podcast, brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you will receive 20% off your next order. I'm Chico, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucsNation.com, and you can follow along on Twitter at Locked On Bucs, at JRCO underscore Bucs, at DHarrison82, and at Bucs underscore Nation. Welcome all new and returning listeners to the show as we are back on the Victory Monday train, heading into week 10, the Buccaneers were reeling from the loss to the New Orleans Saints, ready to take on the Carolina Panthers at Bank of America Stadium.
And on Sunday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did travel to the Carolina Panthers following a 7-hour delay on their flight from Tampa to Charlotte. On top of playing on the road without left guard Ali Marpet, the deck certainly felt a little stacked against the Bucs as they sent the opening kickoff to Teddy Bridgewater's group. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense, though, started off strong, forcing a 3-and-out on Carolina's first offensive possession. All momentum was flipped on its head, however, as Tampa Bay's first drive was derailed quickly by a Ronald Jones fumble, giving the ball back to Bridgewater and the Panthers on the Buccaneers' 33-yard line. Four Bridgewater passes later, Chris Thompson scored from 7 yards out to give Carolina an early 7-0 lead. In a welcome change from week 9, the Buccaneers then put together a drive which lasted almost 3 full minutes longer than their entire time of possession in the first half against the New Orleans Saints. They capped that drive off with a 5-yard connection from Tom Brady to tight end Cameron Brait, and the Ryan Succop extra point tied the game at 7 apiece. Bridgewater led his team on another touchdown drive, aided by two big passes to DJ Moore, including a 24-yard catch and run for the touchdown to give the Panthers back the lead at 14-7. Then the two NFC South Division rivals traded field goals before Tom Brady hit Rob Gronkowski for a 44-yard gain to the Carolina Panthers' 4-yard line, eventually leading to a 3-yard touchdown catch for Mike Evans. Another Ryan Succop made extra point, tied it up again at 17-17 heading into halftime, despite the fact Tampa Bay actually outgained the Carolina Panthers by 70 yards and converted 86% of their third down conversion attempts while holding Carolina to just 20% success on third downs in the first half.
The Buccaneers would open the second half with the ball and an opportunity to take their first lead of the game. They would march 69 yards in 10 plays, but had to settle for only a field goal. However, it did give them a 20-17 lead. With their first possession of the second half, the Panthers were able to muster only 24 yards on 5 plays and were forced to punt. Following a perfect bounce, the Panthers were able to down that punt at the 2-yard line, giving the Buccaneers a 98-yard field in front of them. But then Ronald Jones happened. On the first play of the drive, Ronald Jones ran the ball up the middle behind guard Ryan Jensen, not center, but guard Ryan Jensen, who sprung Rojo free for a 98-yard touchdown run. It was the longest run in Buccaneers history and tied the franchise record for the longest touchdown. On the next offensive play for the Panthers, it was Jason Pierre-Paul who intercepted a Teddy Bridgewater pass, setting the Bucs up with the ball at the Carolina 37-yard line. Once again, the Bucs were only able to come away with a field goal, but they extended their lead over Carolina to 29-17. The Panthers turned the ball over on downs on their following possession, and it led to yet another Ryan Succop field goal and a 32-17 lead. On the ensuing kickoff, the Panthers were able to get a shot of momentum as the kickoff was returned 98 yards, setting up first and goal for Carolina from the 4-yard line. 2 plays later, it was a stretched out Teddy Bridgewater who crossed the goal line and cut the lead to 32-23. The Panthers then attempted a 2-point conversion, which failed, keeping the margin of deficit to 9 points. On their ensuing drive, the Bucs answered with a 75-yard touchdown drive of their own, capped off by a quarterback keeper of their own, Tom Brady, with his third rushing touchdown of the season, giving the Buccaneers a 39-23 lead. On the next Panthers drive, however, it was Jason Pierre-Paul that sacked Teddy Bridgewater, and we saw Teddy Bridgewater leave the game with an apparent knee injury. He would not return and is receiving an MRI as of this recording to find out the extent of that knee injury. PJ Walker would come in Bridgewater's absence, and the Panthers would yet again turn the ball over on downs. The Buccaneers, of course, would take advantage. It was Brady finding Rob Gronkowski for a 7-yard touchdown pass and cementing the game. The Bucs going on to win 46-23. The Buccaneers scored on every possession except for their first, which was the Ronald Jones fumble, and their last, which was Blaine Gabbert kneeling the ball and running the clock out. The Buccaneers are now 7-3 and are preparing for another primetime matchup in Week 11 against the Los Angeles Rams. Coming up next, we are going to hear from some Bucs fans, and we are going to dive a little bit deeper into what we saw as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defeated the Carolina Panthers, all coming up in Segment 2 of the Locked On Bucs podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Fire the cannon! Bucs win! This is Troy from Marvin, Georgia, and this is Matt.
What's up, guys? This is Matt, and that's my son. We enjoyed the game today. Bucs got the victory. I tell you, the Panthers kept it interesting for that first half, but we'll give credit to the coaching staff for coming up with the adjustments and came out there and ran that football. They fed Rojo, and it worked. I was glad to see Mike get more involved in this game as well as the tight ends. It was just a really complete victory there in that second half. Troy, what was your favorite part, when JPP got the interception or when Rojo broke that run, franchise record-setting run?
JPP got that interception.
That's one of your favorite players, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But you liked when Rojo got that run, too, because you got some Reese's cup for that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, we wore the Reese's out today. Went through a whole bag, but hey, that's okay. We made up for last week. But great game. And Troy, you got anything else you want to say?
No, sir. Go Bucs.
Victory Monday here at the Locked On Bucs podcast. And what better way to get segment 2 started than from our good friends, Troy and Matt out there in Georgia. Guys, definitely appreciate you calling into the show. So James, some of the things they talked about there were the differences between the second half of this game and the first half of this game, and specifically feeding running back Ronald Jones. And you know, I mean, this is something obviously, you know, because you're on the show, but this is something that we've been calling for. We called it for it before. Since Leonard Fournette returned from his injury, the Buccaneers have made a very conscious effort, a concerning effort to kind of get Leonard Fournette going more and more and more. And really everybody kind of expecting that eventually Leonard Fournette's basically going to become the primary back. I don't think we can call any of these running backs a feature back, even though I even wrote for BucsNation.com that I feel like Ronald Jones should absolutely be made the feature back in this Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense. But finishing the day with 23 carries, 192 yards and a touchdown. Of course, that 98-yard longest run. Even if you take that 98-yard run off the board, he's still at 22 carries, almost 100 yards. So it's not like he just got one chunk play and then everything else was little. Ronald Jones was legitimately carrying the ball very effectively for this entire game. But really, James, I think it was the defensive adjustments that the Buccaneers made that really have most people talking. And if you look at the first half differences and the second half differences, Teddy Bridgewater left the first half of this matchup with 111 yards passing, finished the game with 136 yards passing. That defense was on a whole other level in the second half, as was Mike Evans. So what did you think about the defense, the adjustments coming out of the locker room, and then Mike Evans' contribution in this win?
Yeah, I think these adjustments were crucial. We saw early in the game, it was a fourth down opportunity for the Panthers. It was fourth and three, and we still saw the corners, you know, playing off these receivers by about 7 to 10 yards. And it's like, why aren't you pressing? Why aren't you up on the line? You know, they only have 3 yards to go. Well, they convert that fourth down and it ends up, you know, they cap off that drive with a touchdown and take the lead. And then in the second half, like you said, I mean, the secondary steps up, the pressure was getting to Teddy Bridgewater. It looked like two totally different teams. And that second half team was really what we've come to know and expect out of the Buccaneers defense. So hopefully they continue to keep that going heading into next week against Los Angeles. But As for Mike Evans, David, we've talked about it. We've seen people freaking out about it on Twitter. Why isn't Mike Evans getting any targets? Why isn't he getting any targets? Why aren't they using Mike Evans? Mike Evans led the team in targets on Sunday with 11. He and Chris Godwin were tied for the second most receptions behind Antonio Brown's 7. And then Evans, 77 yards, a touchdown, had a couple of drops. He had a pass in the end zone that hit off of his hands. He had a pass that would have gone for a first down that, bounced off of his chest. So a couple of drops there for Evans, or he probably would have had a little bit bigger of a game. But I liked the utilization of all these receivers. You look at Antonio Brown, he had 8 targets, 7 receptions, 69 yards. His receptions, I believe it was all but one, resulted in a first down. You were utilizing Mike Evans. Chris Godwin was the go-to guy on third down. You had Gronk with the big 44-yard catch and run where he was just barreling through people. Cameron Brate getting involved, had a huge touchdown catch, was the guy on a big third and 19 conversion. I think the spreading of the ball, Mike Evans was the number one target, but the way that Brady spread the ball around was exactly what we want to see out of this offense, because you never really knew where the ball was going. Third down situations, it was going to Godwin, Evans, and Antonio Brown. So the defense couldn't really key on any one guy because everyone was making plays when they were called upon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at it between the four top receivers. I mean, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski, those are the names that even if you're not a Buccaneers fan, you know those names coming into this game. This is just the game you're watching on a whim, or if you're at B-dubs and just happens to be on the screen in front of you, you know those names. Those guys combined for 28 targets from Tom Brady today, which is 4 more pass attempts than Teddy Bridgewater made the entire game. So using those star players, but then also, like you said, Cam Brate gets 3 targets. Leonard Fournette gets 3 targets. Rojo gets 2. Scotty Miller gets 1. Tyler Johnson gets 1. So, I mean, spreading the ball around, keeping the defense honest, not letting them hone in on any one single factor of this offense, definitely a big part of that. But then also knowing where your talent is and going to them in the big moments and letting them produce for you. I mean, as of right now, the mid-afternoon games before Sunday Night Football still have – some of them still have about half of the fourth quarter left. Most of them are towards the end of the fourth quarter right now as we're recording. Rob Gronkowski and Cam Brate, tight ends number 1 and 2 in fantasy. Meanwhile, Chris Godwin's got 6 catches for 92 yards. Mike Evans, one of the best wide receivers in fantasy football this week. So if you started one of these Buccaneers starters, you're a very happy person right now. Even Chris Godwin. I mean, Chris Godwin's a low end. In a PPR, he's got you, 12, 13 points? You can live with that. You're not going to lose because of Chris Godwin. Obviously, if you're a Rojo owner like I am in my fantasy league, especially my Locked On fantasy league, James, you're extremely happy, and I'm extremely happy.
I had him on my bench. I'm not happy.
Sucks to suck. But ouch. Definitely an offensive performance everybody can build off of and look confident in for the potential of what this team can become. And then, of course, obviously the defense getting off the snide, showing up in that second half, being more aggressive. I mean, Bruce Arians said last week that they actually blitzed more than he even thought, and maybe most of us out here thought. Have to go back and look at the numbers. But to me, like you kind of already said, I think most people on Twitter and the fans who have been watching this game agree, a much more aggressive, a much more physical defense in the second half and really just kind of turn the Panthers into kittens.
All right. Well, David, to continue on this kind of recap of the game, why don't we head out to our friend in the desert, Yusef from Phoenix.
Hey, guys, it's Yusef out here in Phoenix. So let me just first off by saying great game by the Bucs defense. Much more impressive this week around. That's all I wanted last week, and that's all I wanted the week before that. And I just wanted our defense to play what we're good at doing. I have been critical in the past of blitzing too much. You have to still be aggressive. And the last 2 weeks, the Bucs weren't really aggressive at all. And I just want some of that aggressiveness back. And we got that this week. Good game by the offense. Tembry played lights out, of course, as he always seems to do, except last week. But anyway, pretty overly impressed. As I say every week, week in, week out, 1 week at a time. We have 2 big games coming up the next 2 weeks. We got the Rams and then got the Chiefs. I'm still going to hold to being concerned about the defense being consistent. That still is worrisome, but if we can play like we did today, we'll be fine. So 1 week at a time, guys. Go Bucks.
All right, Yusuf, appreciate you out there. I don't know if you're a Suns fan, but hopefully for your sake, those Devin Booker trade rumors aren't true and the Phoenix Suns don't do anything crazy like get rid of their best player. But anyway, sticking to football, like you said at the end, I'm glad you said this at the end, though, but it's a week-to-week business in the National Football League, and I was really happy to hear leading into this weekend's slate of games that Aaron Rodgers was actually asked at one point. I don't know if he was asked specifically about the Buccaneers and Tom Brady or whatever, but he was asked in an interview, it might have been with your boy Pat McAfee, about being consistent in the National Football League. And he said, listen, it's extremely difficult to be as consistent as everybody wants you to be. And I mean, you know, fans talk about media talk. We all talk about how we want the Buccaneers to show this level of performance and efficiency and talent on a week in, week out basis. They want it just as much as we do. So trust me, you're not alone in those frustrations when those things happen. But the thing about growing through adversity, James, and I mean, I think everybody kind of knows it, but it's worth stating out loud, is you have to have the adversity in order to grow from the adversity. You can't grow from adversity if it doesn't exist, right? So games like the Giants that are closer than they should be, losses like the ones to the New Orleans Saints, those are the things that are going to make this team better. They're going to make them stronger. They're going to bring them together through that adversity. Unfortunately, from the outside standpoint, you have to watch them go through it, and you're not in there to help fix it. You're not in there to understand it. So it's a little bit more frustrating from the outside point. But again, coming back in that second half aggression, sometimes, James, I kind of feel like this team maybe game plans against themselves a little too much. And I feel like the Buccaneers maybe kind of got lost in that little bit of a mode, like going against the Giants. Like, you know what? They think we're going to send the house to Daniel Jones every single drive, every single play, every single drop back. We're just going to bring the house. So we'll show them we won't even bring the house. We'll barely even blitz him at all. We'll just sit back in zone and then we'll pick him apart because he's not going to be expecting it. Well, in the sense that you're trying to combat what they're going to combat of you, you've also taken away one of your best weapons. Then you go to New Orleans and you go back to the pregame conversations with Bruce Arians and Antonio Brown talking about, oh, he's going to play, you know, a certain amount of snaps and all this other stuff. And there's some other things that go into it, but he ends up playing 75% of the offensive snaps, getting more looks than he probably should have, more targets than he probably should have with less than a week of total time preparing with the team. And it's almost like, well, you know, we're coming up against New Orleans. They don't expect Antonio Brown to be out there as much. So we'll show them, we'll put him out there a whole lot. Well, that's great. But what you just did, is you put yourself behind the power curve, because now you've got a receiver out there who is playing for the second time in 18 months, hasn't had as much practice, as much time in the classroom, as much time in the meeting rooms, and you kind of end up hurting yourself. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of what I've seen this team doing. And I think this week they went away from that and said, you know what, we're just going to bring our strength and we're going to live and die on our strength. And that's what we're going to do. Hopefully we see that bleed into Monday night against the Rams.
Yeah. I mean, that's you and I talked about it last week. I talked about it with Trevor when he was on Friday. Be who you are. The Buccaneers are a team that brings pressure. They bring it from a lot of different angles. They blitz. Yeah. And just like you said, why are you going to game plan against yourself when what you've been doing has worked so well? So I am still a little bit concerned about the consistency on the defensive side of the ball. I need to see them string this second half performance they had against Carolina. I need to see them string that together for the entire game against the Rams and the entire game against the Chiefs and so on and so forth. Be who you are. So, you know, you need to go out there. You need to bring pressure. You need to be aggressive in the secondary. Play that press man. Stop giving up these big cushions. That's who the Bucs are. That is the identity that they have forged for themselves this year. And by and large, it's worked. Why they've gotten away from it, especially against a team like the New Orleans Saints, didn't make any sense to me. It was nice to see them return to that in the second half against the Carolina Panthers and really establish themselves as the more dominant team.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, it's a week-to-week business, so we'll see if this week's second half performance bleeds into next week's performance altogether. We've got plenty of time to talk about that. But we're going to finish up our conversation today. We've got one more segment coming up, and in it, we're going to revisit our predictions, give our final thoughts on the best and the worst parts of Week 10 for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we're going to do so thanks in large part due to our friends over at Built Bar, which comes in 18 amazing standard flavors. And the company continues dropping limited and special flavors like strawberry and pumpkin chocolate chip cookie all the time. Built Bars are the most delicious protein bars you're ever going to taste. They're covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, low calorie, low sugar, high in protein, high fiber, and great for the keto diet. For example, the peanut butter Built Bar has 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. All you've got to do to get involved in this deal is go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Or if you've already used the product and enjoy using it and want to continue doing so, get 20% off your next order. Same code, Locked On, for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Prediction receipts are best and worst coming up in segment three of the Locked On Bucks podcast.
Wrapping up a Victory Monday edition of the Locked On Bucks podcast. And David, we made some bold predictions. We made some score predictions. You did yours a little bit earlier in the week than I did. But my bold prediction for this game was all about Tom Brady bouncing back after a rough game against the Saints. I predicted Brady would go for over 250 yards. Check. Three or more touchdowns. Check. Zero interceptions, check. No sacks, nope, sacked one time. But I will say I loved how much better the protection was this week compared to last week. A.Q. Shipley going in at center, moving Ryan Jensen over to guard. That was a key to springing Ronald Jones on that 98-yard run. So I like that alignment in Ali Marpep's absence far more than having Joe Haig come in and play guard. My final score prediction was 34-17, so I was a little bit off, but hey, I'll take it. It was close enough.
Yeah, for me, my score prediction was 31-21. As far as my bold prediction, I predicted that there might be a little bit of an overcorrection to the running game woes that plagued the Buccaneers against New Orleans Saints that Bruce Arians eventually took responsibility for. So perhaps pulling Byron Leftwich out from under the bus, but that just kind of goes into, James, a little bit what we've been talking about, how this offense is run anyway. So it really didn't make me feel a whole lot better. But, you know, you can't argue with the results. You can't argue with the performance. Ronald Jones, 23 carries, 192 yards. Leonard Fournette, 8 carries, 19 yards. My bold prediction was that they would combine for 20 carries and 150 yards. Rojo just said, here, hold my Gatorade, and just took care of the entire thing for me himself, which, again, makes my fantasy team really happy, makes me really happy. In fact, they actually combined for over 150 yards rushing alone after that 98-yard run, and then just added on to it with another quarter and a half left to play. So I think it's my first bold prediction to actually come true this year.
Yeah, it very well might be. I've gotten a couple of them right. I was real close on this one, but hey, congratulations on your first. No, I want to say I gave you one earlier this year. There was
yeah, some. I mean, we trimmed the circle to fit into the square hole, like the circle pegged into the square hole. Like, we kind of whittled it down a little bit to make it squeeze in there. But I mean, this one actually, like, I nailed
this one. Was dead on. Yeah,
just this is dead my on. First successful spicy Cheeto attempt at a bowl prediction. So
hey, and how deliciously spicy it was. All right, best and worst. David, I'm going to go with the best first, and it's got to be Ronald Jones. What a performance by him, the way he bounced back. You have a fumble on your first reception of the game. Credit to BA and to Byron Leftwich for sticking with him. He was right back out on the field on the very next drive. It wasn't an immediate pull. They didn't immediately just abandon him altogether, and it paid off. Big time, incredible game from Ronald Jones. The mental fortitude by him to shake off that fumble and show, hey, look, I should be the lead back on this offense. It was a phenomenal performance. Really, really happy to see it for him.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, can we make Ronald Jones a feature back of this offense yet? I know he's a starting offense or the starting running back, maybe the primary running back. Can we just make him the feature back? Like, I want to put Leonard Fournette in a full-on support role. You have your spot that you come in. Other than that, it's Rojo's game. Anyway, maybe a little bit of an overreaction for me, but I don't know. I think the dude is he's proven that he's ready to carry the mantle. My best, since you took Rojo from me, is going to be the defense. It's got to be the defense. I'm not even going to say just the second half defense. I'm going to say the entire defense, because even though – you know, the Panthers jumped out to a lead, even though the Panthers were able to put 17 points up, points on them in the first half. I mean, honestly, without that fumble, I think the Panthers maybe have 10 points in the first half. And anytime you can hold an NFL team to under 10 points, the target is always what? Hold them under 20. That's what you want to do. You want to hold every NFL team under 20 points. So if you're holding them to 10 points or even 13, you're doing pretty well as far as an NFL defense is concerned. And like I said, I mean, you are what the scoreboard says, whatever, all that stuff. So 17 points given up by the Buccaneers defense. But again, without that fumble, I mean, you have the three and out on the first series. I think that without that fumble, the Panthers probably have 10, maybe 13 points going into the half. And then if the Buccaneers offense is able to do what they did, you're looking at a 17-13 lead, 17-10 lead. This thing gets out of control probably a lot earlier than it actually did. And then like Troy said, seeing JPP come up with that interception. Listen, something I really like about this game, it's like everything that went wrong against New Orleans went right against the Carolina Panthers. I mean, and look at JPP. The interception he could have had last week against Drew Brees is the interception that he did have against Teddy Bridgewater. I know it's different circumstances and all that stuff, but you just kind of look at those things. Like last week, JPP drops an interception. This team gets blown out of their own house, embarrassed on national television, all that stuff. This week, he secures the pick. The defense gets rolling, and they come out looking like champs. So that's my best. My worst, James, I suppose I'll roll right into the worst. So I've gotten some credit on BucksNation.com when I write the best and the worst for having to nitpick. So I want to be clear before I say this. This is a nitpicking worst. I'm going Devin White. And here's the thing. He actually tied for the team lead in combined tackles. He and Levante David each came up with 6 tackles. But we're not seeing the sacks. We're not seeing, you know, the fumbles, the forced fumbles, the interceptions. Just recently over the last few weeks, I don't know all the stats from every single game, but we're just not seeing the electricity from Devin White that I think we've been kind of hoping. Really, like, the last thing I really remember Devin White doing that really electrified the defense was that hit on Derek Carr on 4th down in Las Vegas, which, don't get me wrong, was an amazing hit. And again, this is a nitpicking thing. So if you're out there listening to this, you're like, oh, well, you're down-talking Devin White, who led the team in tackles. I'm not down-talking him as an overall player. I'm saying in this game, this is the kind of game you have a team that's kind of looking to pick themselves up off the mat. They were struggling as a group a little bit in the first half, specifically the first quarter, really. You want to see him kind of come in, do something. He's got that captain's patch on. He's got that electricity to him. You want to see him come in and do something, make a play, lay a hit, get a forced fumble, something. Do something to help electrify your group. You didn't really see it. Honestly, I mean, the middle linebacker, like Levante David even, I mean, tied for the team leading tackles, but really had kind of a quiet game as well. He did give up kind of an ugly a reception early on in the game where, you know, we can break that down a little bit longer if we want to later in the week, but just not enough juice from Devin White for me. Again, a nitpicky worst, but that's going to be my worst.
I also have a nitpicky worst. This is a specific play, not even a player, not a position group, a specific play that really, really irritated me. Following an interception, the Buccaneers were marching down the field. They had first and goal from the Carolina 4. Ronald Jones gets the carry up the middle, gets down to the 1 yard line. Okay, great. Second and goal on the left side, they had Antonio Brown lined up one on one. There was no safety help over there, there was no linebacker help over there. Everybody was crashing the middle to try to stop the run. If you're going to have Antonio Brown one-on-one with absolutely no help, you run a slant to Antonio Brown because he wins that 100 times out of 100, and that's 6 points. Instead, they hand the ball off to Ronald Jones. He's hit for a 2 yard loss. Third and goal, incomplete to Tyler Johnson. The Bucs have to settle for a field goal. You have arguably one of the best route runners we've seen over the last decade. If you cannot trust him in a goal-to-go situation to beat his guy one-on-one and get you 6 points, there was no point in bringing him in to begin with. You could have run that play with AB. You could have run it with Chris Godwin. You could have run it with Mike Evans. The big difference is, and shout out to our friend Derek Fournier over at What the Buck. He pointed this out on Twitter. When they've had Mike Evans lined up in that same position, there has been safety help shadowed over there to make sure that it's not a one-on-one situation. Chris Godwin, same thing. AB, it was strictly one-on-one, and he would have won that battle. It really irritated me that Brady didn't check out of it and sling him the ball, or that Byron Leftwich didn't call that play for it to be a pass. So, again, a nitpicky worst, but that play sticks out in my mind very vividly as to what are you thinking. This is why people get frustrated with the play calling. And that's going to lead right into my final thoughts real quick. This is the Buccaneers team we expect to see. It was a rough start, but the way they played in that second half, that is the Buccaneers team we expect to see week in and week out. That is the Buccaneers team that can go toe-to-toe with anybody in the NFL. Why that team didn't show up last week is beyond me. But you know what? There's a real good chance they're going to get one more shot at the Saints come January. That's the team I expect to see. Want to see them roll it over into another primetime performance, because we all know primetime has not been their friend. We need the Bucs to come out and make an absolute statement against the Los Angeles Rams. Overall, great team win by everybody involved.
Absolutely. My final thought for this game on this episode is going to be a shout out to Greg Allman. I can't remember the exact percentage, but he said that teams that go 7-3 in their first 10 games have I think it was 90%+ chance of making the NFL playoffs. There are some tough games coming up. The Rams is not going to be easy. The Chiefs, obviously not going to be easy. Even the Falcons, I mean, definitely a team that this team should beat, but it's an NFC South game. You never know what's going to happen in those games. It's always tough. And these guys always step up. During halftime, there was a comment made on the broadcast where Matt Rhule spoke to one of the reporters and said, look, we're good. All the pressure is on them. That is how this team is viewed. Again, going back to last week, right? I think it was Devin White sent out a tweet before the Saints game, said going from being the hunters to being the hunted. This team is being hunted every single week. And if you don't think the Rams, the Kansas City Chiefs, the other playoff contenders aren't coming out here to try to throttle the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and knock them off their pedestal a little bit as playoff favorites, you got another thing coming. And if this team doesn't come in ready every single game for their opponent's best game, then they're going to have some other ugly losses. So let's see if this energy, this preparation, these adjustments that were made in the second half continue, because every single weekend is going to be a heavyweight fight for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
All right. With that, David, we are out of here. Please make sure you are checking out tomorrow's episode. We have more voicemails from you guys, including a conversation about OJ Howard and Vita Vea. You don't want to miss that. Until then, check out everything going on over at BucsNation.com. Make sure you're following along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JRCO_Bucks, at DHarrison82, and at Bucs_Nation. Hope you all have an absolutely outstanding victory Monday. Stay safe, stay healthy, wash your hands, be good to each other, and thank you so much for joining us right here